Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host, Jasper, and Ghostface Millet is my co-pilot for a discussion of the surprisingly gloomy man versus nature thriller, The Grey, in which Liam Neeson survives a plane crash, gets lost in the frozen Alaskan wilderness, and does not wind up punching out like 80 wolves, regrettably.
What was that?
The Alpha. They went at him. Put it down. Whatever that challenge was, the Alpha put it down.
How are we gonna deal with this?
We kill him. One at a time. Tip the numbers. That's what they're doing to us.
I want to open this Scorncast review of The Grey with two apologies. One, I want to apologize for my voice. I know it's weird that I don't sound like a teenage girl as usual. And that's because I either have a cold or this movie is so rigidly masculine that it finally triggered my puberty, which is a relief because I've been waiting for this shit for like 2 decades. So you get to decide which it is. I also want to apologize to our listeners because The Grey is not really the kind of movie that we're used to reviewing on Scorncast. Here on Scorncast, we tend to gravitate towards the big budget blockbusters, the junkier stuff, films that are generally either really easy to enjoy or really easy to have fun talking about. And here we are reviewing The Grey, a movie that is sort of somber and grim and pretty much funereal. However, this is not our fault because how this movie plays is very different than what I was expecting based on its marketing campaign and a few other factors that we'll get into momentarily. So, Ghostface, that was the longest preamble ever, but I wanted to know if you wanted to rise up alongside me and shake a fist at the trailer for this thing, which to me made it seem like a prime slab of Scorncasty goodness.
Yeah, totally. I feel the exact same way. I was going into this movie thinking that it was going to be like Taken, but instead of being like in Europe, it was going to be in, you know, Antarctica. You know, I think actually one of my coworkers made the joke that he kept calling it Punches with Wolves. And I thought that was pretty great. And that's kind of the movie that I thought it was going to be. And I was looking forward to him punching wolves.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get into it, but it was not that movie.
I think it was one wolf punch in the whole movie.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. And it was not even a satisfying wolf punch.
Nope. I wanted like the wolf cold cocked with like a really cool kiss off line.
Yeah, like, howl you later.
Okay, that was way better than what I was thinking.
Or how about howled you like them?
Oh, wow. That's really good. See, I can't. That's two, and I have nothing. So, this has been Scorncast. But yeah, the trailer. Let's talk about that really quickly, because this is a trailer I think I saw once, maybe, in a theater. It's not one of the ones that I got to see over and over again. I'm looking at you, salmon fishing in the Yemen. Because I cannot escape it. It's following me around. But the orchestral score is very bombastic. I remember the tagline that like shows up on text on the screen is, "How hard would you fight to get back home?" And then it's like got shots of Liam Neeson being a badass and saying things like, "We take them on one at a time." Wow, I actually do a good Liam Neeson when I am either sick or hitting puberty.
Yeah,
amazing.
So
yeah.
You're like halfway to Liam Neeson.
I just need to work on the Irish a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Furrow your brow.
Yeah. You can't see it, but it's maximum furrowage right now. Oh, it's making my head hurt. But yeah, so Liam Neeson is an actor who's sort of become like the Will Smith of the post-holiday cinematic dumping ground. Past couple years, he's had some movies that came out that have sort of established this reputation for him being just kind of a badass who kills everyone. So I'm specifically talking about the movie Taken, which came out 3 years ago, which Taken was like a crazy over-the-top action movie where Liam Neeson's daughter is kidnapped while vacationing in Europe, and he kills like 47% of the population of France in order to retrieve her. And then 1 year ago, he was in Unknown, which is a crazy over-the-top mystery where he played an amnesiac who eventually learns he's an assassin who's supposed to kill a guy because of a genetically modified strain of corn. Yes, that's if you haven't seen Unknown, that's a spoiler that you deserve to hear because it's ridiculous and stupid.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he just goes around punching people and you know, that's what I think this trailer played up to me. That's what I went in expecting. And it also doesn't help that this movie is directed by a guy named Joe Joe Carnahan, who directed Smoke and Aces, which I thought was kind of a hot mess, even with Alicia Keys as a badass assassin. He did A-Team from the previous summer, which is disposable, but I thought a lot of fun. And I just think Joe Carnahan's like filmmaking aesthetic to me is summed up by the title of his first movie from a while ago, which is Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane. I got some blood and some guts. A few bullets. The Octane was missing from this movie, I would say.
Yeah, I guess knowing that the same director worked on those other movies, I would have even expected a completely different movie. From I would have definitely expected the movie from the trailer and a typical sort of Liam Neeson movie, but like almost on steroids or like to the point of being kind of a B movie, you know, pretty over the top, but in a good way, in a fun way. I think like those other movies were, and this movie was very sad.
Yeah.
I think it opens with him narrating, right? And he's immediately setting the stage of like how much of a depressing sort of character he is.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we get like vague allusions to the fact that he's at the end of his tether, and then very quickly we see him putting a gun in his mouth, and it's whoa, like, right. Slow down a minute here.
He's sort of an anti-hero, and I guess you're sort of rooting for him, but you're also, you just sort of feel really bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, Liam Neeson is a likable actor. I think that, you know, you go into this movie, Liam Neeson is there, you're expecting him to be a badass, you very quickly see him putting the gun in his mouth, and then the howl of a wolf mystically stops him from pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, there's a few things that I'm puzzled about with this movie.
Just a few.
Yeah.
So let's set this up. He actually plays a sharpshooter of wolves for an oil rig in Alaska. He's the guy who shoots the wolves Sarah Palin style. We had to do it. Come on.
It's like the security guard, sort of. But yeah. You know, he would only secure it against nature because they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, when his coworkers are out there rigging oil, I guess. I don't really know what that involves. That he shoots the wolves that are sort of predatory, which actually we should probably also bring up. Apparently this movie is under attack from like people who really love wolves.
Yeah, and I think Liam Neeson personally is under attack because he admitted that he ate wolf flesh while filming this movie.
I read that. They only like had two wolf corpses on the set, and they bought them from like local wolf murderers, I guess, or something. And one of them was there for the cast to consume, I guess, as part of like a male bonding sort of retreat thing. Weird. And the other one was for a visual effect that they needed, like a wolf corpse, because I guess dummy wolf corpses don't work very well. Neither do CG wolves. Let's just say that right off the bat.
Yeah, like, we've said it before and we'll say it again. Yeah, never do that.
It's the hair, I think. Like, they can't just get it. They can't get it to look right.
Yeah, I think it's also the movement. Like, there's certain things about their legs. There was a few parts in this movie where I sort of laughed because of the way they moved. And I don't know if it was a puppet or if it was CG, but it was not a real wolf.
Yeah, and I'm not entirely convinced that they weren't puppets some of the time because they seem to attack at night. Mostly.
Or off camera.
Yes. And when they attack, it's either one of two things. It's either at night where it's very dark and you can't really see the wolves biting. Like, it's, you know, obviously like shrouded in darkness. Or the handheld camera style gets so like over the top crazy. And it's supposed to be like, no, this is exciting. You're watching something exciting happen. But it's, you know, also very obviously to cover up the fact that someone is probably rubbing a puppet on Liam Neeson.
Right.
Yeah. So he is a wolf sharpshooter. He's on a plane from the rig, taking him and some of his coworkers back to, I guess, civilization. And his voiceover narration in the beginning of the movie, already, like, I was kind of laughing at the movie because, first of all, he describes them as ex-cons, fugitives, drifters, assholes, men unfit for mankind. I mean, like, I would have wanted to see that movie, but I don't think we got that movie, right?
No, not at all. That part of the movie that we get is right when he's saying that. And, like, in sort of a isolated bar, you know, that, like, the workers go to every night after they're done, you know, rigging the oil. and there's, like, a huge bar brawl, and he just, like, walks out. That was, like, your only glimpse into that sort of aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, they're actually, like, pretty sappy, like, sentimental dudes. You know, and, like, not that there's anything wrong with that, but, like, that's not how they're established.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, these are supposed to be, like, you know, the scum of the earth. Like, the Star Wars cantina, but, like, in Alaska.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're pretty much the same way. If you look at the Star Wars aliens in the cantina, and you're like, oh, they're not so bad.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. He also keeps this motif up where he keeps referring to this line of poetry that's vaguely sort of almost like from Henry V. it's like once more into the fray, into the last good fight I'll ever know. And this is repeated a couple times. And at first, the first time he says this in his voiceover, I thought like, oh, please, like, please don't. Let's not embarrass ourselves. Yeah. But then it kind of makes sense, I guess, later on within the context of like what that line means to him. It's, of course, Liam Neeson had a very Irish upbringing. He even, I think, comments on the fact that his father was like a stereotypical Irishman who had a drinking problem.
Right.
So his father, this was something his father wrote and like,
exactly.
Had crocheted also, like, into a wall hanging.
Yeah, he did a little embroidery, some needlework.
So not so stereotypical Irishman, huh?
Yeah, he makes some sort of comment that he was, like, very cold and stern and would drink and be abusive or something.
Yeah.
He says, like, the only thing he enjoyed or, like, expressed himself with or in was poetry.
Ah, yes.
Which I guess, you know, he's following in the footsteps of James Joyce. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was kind of weird. But yeah, the first time he reads the poem, I was kind of like, is this movie really going to be like this?
Yeah, I mean, I was at least glad that they explained it as he was actually reciting a poem and not just being like off the fly, like once more into the fray.
Yeah.
So I guess that's okay. But he's on a plane. They're flying these guys out from the rig to back to civilization, and the plane loses a wing or something. It's sort of like a harrowing plane crash sequence that's also like not harrowing because again it's shot in a way that sort of like covers up the I guess the budgetary limitations of this movie.
Yeah, you kind of don't really see any, and you do see some interesting stuff. Most of it was ruined in the trailer, like, it's insofar as like the exact way that the sound gets so intense that it starts to stutter, mm-hmm. and then it ends and it's complete silence. Like, they gave that sort of trick away in the trailer. So that part of it is kind of like, for me, it was sort of not ruined, but it was like, you already saw it. So it wasn't like that exciting. And then he's sort of just knocked out and wakes up and everything's over. Right?
Yeah. He sleeps through the worst part of it.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the way they get around it. And then you just sort of see wreckage.
Yeah. Actually, what we should also say is when he gets on this plane, I want to point out two things. I mean, obviously, you know what movie you're paying to see. It's The Gray. It's the plane crash wolf movie. So you know that like they're going to crash and some of these guys aren't going to make it, but it's very easy to sort of pick out which ones are going to make it immediately when he gets on the plane, because there's like the asshole guy who sits next to him, played by Joe Anderson from Across the Universe and The Ruins, and you know he's going to be safe just for the manufactured drama. And then it shows like a black guy sitting there, and you know he's safe for diversity.
Yeah.
And then you know Dermot Mulroney is safe because he's Dermot Mulroney, is the most recognizable actor in the film besides Liam Neeson. And the other thing I would point out, and this is probably one of my favorite things about the movie, but when Liam Neeson is sitting there in the plane seat before the plane takes off, does he have a picture of his wife? Or no, he has a
he has a note that he wrote her.
Yes.
And he, I guess he wrote her that from like his weird little room, you know, on the oil rig site. Mm-hmm. But he wrote it like a drunk person.
Yeah.
Like, it says, I forget what he opens it with. It was like, my dearest one or something. What was it?
So, I think it was my dear one, maybe.
It was
like
something that.
That
was like so awkward. Like, do people really write that anymore? And also like his handwriting was kind of
awful.
Like, it was illegible.
Yeah. Yeah. But he sits down in the seat and he's like reading this note, and you see through the movie like vague ethereal like shots of him laying in bed with his wife, which turns out to be something different later on in the movie. But he's laying in bed with his wife all dreamlike, and there's sort of like a almost verging on like, I don't want to say angel choir musical score happening, but very like obviously like it matches with the imagery of this like dream reality.
Yeah.
And Joe Anderson comes in, who's the asshole who sits beside him, and sits down next to him, and almost like immediately when he plunks down into the seat, it stops the musical score abruptly, and like the only thing that would have been like one step further than that would have been like a record scratch.
Yeah, or a fart noise. Because that's honestly what it was. It was that kind of feeling the whole time.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah. And I thought for a brief moment, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be that kind of movie.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, that is the only example of that kind of thing happening in this entire movie. And it feels so out of place that they would almost, like, be self-referential that he was, like, having this glorious dream and it was interrupted and the musical score is like, beow.
That was really weird. It was kind of jarring.
Yeah. And speaking of jarring, they get in this plane crash, which is very jarring for all of them, I'm sure. And when Liam Neeson comes to, I think there are, what, like 7 survivors from this whole plane, and they're stranded in Alaska, far away from civilization, but near a very ravenous population of wolves.
Yeah.
And they try to make their way to some sort of civilization or safety, and the wolves stalk them, and it's, you know, very much set up like a survival horror movie. Here's a mathematical formula you can use to determine how much time is left in the movie if you get kind of bored like I did. Take the number of central characters left alive at any given moment and multiply it by like 12 or 13 minutes.
Because that's about how much time they spend on each of the deaths.
Yeah.
Every time someone dies, it was like, let's all cry, let's pray, let's take a moment, let's let the music swell and have like slow motion pans of their dead body or whatever it was. There's a lot of like weird kind of scenes like that. And those scenes would happen right after some gruesome death that like you either saw or you didn't see, but it had like sort of a, like a Final Destination kind of feeling. Like it was death porn.
Yeah.
And then would have this like funeral porn like right after.
It's kind of just assuming that you're attached to these people, which I wasn't.
They're not even established in that way that they're like crooks with a heart. Like they're supposed to have a heart, but you don't know them, so you don't care. And they're not really like the crooks that you thought they were. So you're just not invested in them at all.
And they're also supposed to be, like he said, ex-cons, fugitive drifters, and assholes. And there's kind of one of them who's a little bit of an asshole initially and then sort of softens as assholes must. I'm not even talking about the asshole who sits next to him on the plane, played by Joe Anderson. There's like another guy on the plane who is the obligatory Latino thug with the neck tattoos. I guess that's what they're going for.
He has a neck tattoo that is no mas, which means no more. And that means like he's like a hardened criminal, I guess, for a neck tattoo.
He's either the ex-con or the fugitive.
Yeah.
Maybe a drifter, definitely an asshole.
Right.
But even he like is fine after initially he tries to pull rank on Liam Neeson. And I mean, I don't know why you would try to pull rank on Liam Neeson. They're up against wolves. And I think as far as I can tell, he's the only guy on that plane who's hired to kill wolves.
Yeah, so. It's true. But at the same time, he literally walks them right into the wolf den.
That is true.
Like, not to jump ahead. I trust this guy as far as like what he knows about wolves, but he does not know these exact wolves. You know what I mean? Like, and he, I feel like he kind of makes some bad decisions.
It's not interesting to watch because he's the same all through the movie. There's no guy in this movie that like grows or becomes the badass to like take down the wolves in the end of the movie. And maybe that's the fault of my expectations and like approaching the movie trailer and thinking this was going to be a different movie than it was. But it's just, it's so static and it's the same thing all the way through. It's just, it's not a very interesting movie to watch.
For the most part, everyone dies from a wolf, right? There's like 2 deaths that are different, right? One person dies just from the cold,
yeah.
I think, and one person dies from like falling like violently from a tree and like just fucking breaking their neck or something. Like, I don't even know.
The wolves do get him, to be fair.
That's true. The wolves do get him. Although I think he was already dead.
Yeah.
But either way, the wolves really prove their point.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, no, that's one person drowns.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody dies. Like, it's just not in a satisfying way of being like, oh shit, that guy's dead. I was like, all right.
And for a brief moment, I thought maybe, just maybe, this was going to turn into a monster movie, because there's a scene in the movie where they're all camping out. A couple of them have died already. It's night. They're in the middle of like a forest. They hear a noise. They hear some wolves howling, I think. And then they hear a noise that disquiets the wolves. And like for a second, I thought, wait a minute, is this like weird marketing? Like this movie actually kind of has a twist to it that the trailers didn't reveal. And I was kind of excited that there might be a monster out there.
Around that same time is when I had another one of those feelings that this movie could go in a different direction and start to become interesting, in that there was either a monster or that there was some sort of super wolf or super wolves, you know, that like were outranking these other wolves. And all they explained was, and this is, you know, this is like legit, whatever, like that there was an alpha and that the alpha had like put the other wolves in their place. But the noises that the alpha made were like lion noises.
Yes.
Like they were trying to make these wolves like, they were in this weird middle area where like they weren't normal wolves and they weren't just like sticking to their gruesome crazy wolfness, and they weren't like these super power wolves. They were like in this area in between where they were sort of like not believable, but also not like so awesome and crazy and scary that you were like, damn, this movie's good, or like, these fucking wolves are crazy, you know. I was just kind of like, more wolves, you know. Like, I don't know. I and also you don't see them often, like you said earlier, you know, like you see them in night, you see glowing eyes a lot, the most times that you see the wolves, they're sort of just staring at the people, and the people are staring back at them, and that's not always fun to watch. Like, sometimes, you know, one or two shots of that, you know, and when you really build the tension.
Yeah, I would say one thing that I will laud the movie on, I was a fan of the environment, I guess. If not the nature necessarily, but I thought for a movie that was set in Alaska, I think it was shot in British Columbia, and I found it really effective in terms of the snow, which sounds like the most ridiculous compliment I've paid a movie since I lauded the scene order in Real Steel, because it was logical.
I totally actually agree with you, and I do think that's one of the things this movie did pretty well, in that, I mean, they did set up that this nature is sort of a beast, it's sort of another character. There's one shot where they're kind of panning around, it's just white, you know, like for as far as you can see, and the wind is like howling, and it's so crazy loud, and you know, even in the theater, it's like, it's almost kind of like, when is this scene gonna end, because this wind is like driving me crazy, like it was so loud.
Yeah.
And then there's other times too when the camera's sort of like taking on the motions of the characters as they're like trudging through the snow, and they're sort of trying to like run back to this person who fell behind and is now being attacked by wolves. And every time Liam Neeson's character would like take a deep sort of step into the snow, the camera would kind of go down with him and kind of come back up. And it really did sort of make you feel, you know, in a very subjective camera way, that you were kind of walking right next to him, and that's sort of, you know, how slow you would be if you were trudging through quicksand or deep snow.
Yeah, I was a little confused too. Like, it looked to me very realistic. I mean, there are a couple shots, like the scene where they're trying to cross off that cliff into the trees, where it looked very computer generated. But mostly, I thought it was really effective, and it kind of threw me because all those shots of their boots in that snow, that, you know, when they're trying to run after somebody to prevent them from being eaten by wolves, that crunching and that sort of lethargy to their pace, like, just exactly. That was probably the most horrifying thing about the movie, is that there's somebody like being mauled maybe 20 feet away from you, but you can't get to them in time.
They could not get to them fast enough, and it had sort of like a Cloverfield quality to it, because like not that it was like found footage at all, but the way that the camera behaved, you sort of felt like you were there, and you were you're getting glimpses of kind of what's going on in the distance. Like, there's sort of like wind blowing snow in front of your face, and also every time you take a step down, you know, you're sort of like, your gaze is averted. And I thought that was one of the more effective things that they did.
Yeah, but also at the same time, I was wondering how cold it was wherever they were shooting, because this is supposed to be obviously like, you know, death freeze temperatures. And when the characters speak, very rarely do you ever see the cold air. The hot air, actually, like merging with the coldness of the environment. Then again, also, I was sort of grateful for that, because if there's one thing I really can't stand in movies, it's like CGI breath. It's like the second to wolves. It's the least convincing thing in movies.
I actually think they overdid that right before the plane crash. I don't know if you remember, but I'm pretty sure it was all CG mouth steam, you know, like the, like they were trying to show how, like, either how high the plane was flying, or that the plane was flying into an ice storm, or God knows what.
On the plane, right.
Everyone, like, I think Liam Neeson's character is like asleep, and you're like seeing the nose steam like come out, you know, like, and I'm pretty sure it was all CG, because I remember being like, this is a bit much.
Yeah. So I guess we have to talk about the ending of this movie.
Yeah.
Basically, the ending of the movie is given away in the trailer, and it sort of is the biggest problem I have, just because, like, you watch that trailer, and like we were saying earlier, you think this is going to be like a big badass show, but the most badass thing that happens in the movie is given away in the trailer, where Liam Neeson faces down a wolf on his own with like mini liquor bottles that are smashed on a rock, like fixed to his hand, like Freddy Krueger,
like
Jack Daniel gloves. It's crazy, and he tapes them to his hands too, and he tapes a knife to his other hand, and basically, you know, shows down with the alpha wolf, and they stare each other down, and I feel like Liam Neeson might lunge towards the wolf, and then it cuts to black, and that's the end of the movie.
He has time to say a prayer, to say that poem.
Oh yes, he does, once more into the fray.
He says the whole, because it ends, I think the last two lines are repeated, but it's live and die on this day, right? So from the trailer alone, you would think that that's the beginning of the third act, right? That's like when this character finally has a breakthrough, and he even has like this sort of intense speech where he like screams at God and like cries and kind of really does have this breakthrough, and it's kind of a like an emotional moment, and then he just goes, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And it's just like, what?
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, all right, well, at least he's taking matters into his own hands. And then the movie ends.
Yeah. I hate movies that end like that. I feel like it's maybe becoming more of a trend now for movies to just stop rather than end. But
yeah.
At the same time, you know, we want the badass Liam Neeson face wolf punching, wolf face punching, however you say it. We want that to happen. But I mean, the movie up to that point has been nothing but just these guys dying one by one. It's very depressing to watch. It's sort of arduous watching this movie, honestly, for reasons other than it not being a good movie. Just the content of it is not something that is like very entertaining. Even people who like it, I would be surprised if they have any desire to see it again. But, you know, at that point in the movie, the least believable thing that could happen would be for him to like go all ninjutsu on this wolf with his like glass glove hand and kill it and then take on, you know, a bunch more. So I guess the movie has painted itself into a corner at that point, and there's no real way for it to pull out. So that's why we get the ending that we do.
Is it futile? Like, was he going to die the whole time? And in which case, like, what is the point of this movie? I don't know. And I think they kept alluding to, you know, him wanting to get back to his wife, but then they sort of also maybe allude to the fact that she's dead.
Yeah, that's what I got. I mean, I got the fact that that's why he was suicidal. I
just pulled that out of nowhere. Because, you know, what you said earlier, the trailer was like, how much would you do or how far would you go to get back home? And it's like sort of like to get back home to your wife.
Yeah, what was he returning to? Because he wanted to kill himself and his wife was presumably dead. So.
Yeah, so it was almost sort of like when put in the fight, he will fight. But if he's just like in his normal life, he'll kill himself. Like, well, I was sort of confused about that.
Well, it's the last good fight he'll ever know. And he will either live or die on this day.
I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess it all goes back to his, you know, abusive dad's wonderful.
It's cross-stitching. here's a question for you. Did you stay for the credits?
I didn't.
Wow, so you didn't see the scene at the end of the credits?
Shut up. Are you serious?
No, yeah.
What was it?
Basically, Michael Sheen and the rest of the Volt. Oh, sorry, wrong end scene. No, in this one, it's a very quick scene, but it's just a shot of Liam Neeson laying on the wolf, and one of them is breathing. You can see like the steam coming up.
CG steam.
Yeah, and you're not quite sure, I guess, which one it is. If it's Liam Neeson or if it's the wolf. So
weird.
Yeah. So that was completely baffling.
Yeah, I don't think that would have made it any better.
No. Oh, it didn't. It didn't.
Yeah, I mean, even if he did kill the alpha, right? Like, are the other wolves going to stop? But yeah, you're exactly right. Like, they painted themselves into a corner. I can't.
Yeah. I guess the last point I want to bring up, this is the funniest thing ever about this movie. So, the distributor of this movie, apparently I read on Wikipedia, and I didn't believe this. I thought it was just one of those, like, stupid Wikipedia things, and then I was sort of proven wrong. Apparently it used some cross-promotional strategies in order to promote this movie to Christian groups. It made a like a pamphlet that was distributed to churches. I would just like to read you a quote from this pamphlet. "The Grey is a riveting storyline that reminds us that we are all on the clock, every one of us. We are all being stalked by time. More importantly, it reminds us that a spiritual battle is raging all around us as we run the gauntlet of this life, a war for our souls that many fail to recognize. Wolves are constantly circling, and we need the shield of faith, the breastplate of righteousness, sword of the spirit, and the helmet of salvation to fight them off and make it into God's loving embrace." What?
Yeah, is that for real?
Yeah, that's real. That's real.
That is nuts.
That's not the movie that I saw at all.
No, not at all. I mean, I think in some ways, like, he is, quote unquote, like a good Christian or whatever, but all of that stuff is, you're really giving it too much credit with that.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, like, yeah, it seems like they're desperate, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think these are metaphoric wolves or anything. No.
I think that they're metaphors now only in the sense that, like, we were talking about wolf enthusiasts. Well, and I can't talk about people who like wolves without making them sound like they want to have sex with them, but people, but like wolf lovers, see, I can't, wolf people, wolf fans of wolves.
Wolf files.
Who are saying, like, who are ragging on this movie because this is not an accurate presentation of wolves, and now Joe Carnahan is sort of in a position where he's like, oh no, but the wolves are a metaphor, like these are metaphorical wolves. But yeah. I feel like they're really reaching for this, because I mean, you know, at a certain point, like you said, in the end of this movie, Liam Neeson is just basically like yelling at God, and he's like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. So yeah. I'm not getting this, like, spiritual battle. I mean, they do discuss it at a certain point, maybe even a couple times in the movie, about, you know, what's going to happen to them or if there's an afterlife. And there's kind of a recurring motif where some of the characters are sort of ushered into the afterlife by, like, hallucinations of a loved one coming for them.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot about that.
And as soon as Dermot Mulroney is sitting around the campfire in the middle of the movie and he's talking about his daughter's long, beautiful hair, you're going, all right, we're going to see that later dangling in your face when you die. And that is exactly what happens.
Okay, but can I just explain that?
Yeah.
Because it is ridiculous. So he says that she wakes him up by, like, you know, running her long hair over his face.
Creepy.
And saying like, I love you, daddy, or whatever. Yeah. I don't even know what it is. Yeah, but it's, like, creepy.
Yeah.
And when he dies, he falls from that big stupid tree and, like, snaps his neck or whatever, and he's chewed up by wolves or whatever, and he's all bloody. His face is covered in blood, you know, his beautiful face. And then you hear something like, I love you, daddy, or whatever. And then, like, hair just, like, sort of comes into the frame.
I was like, oh, shit, it's that girl from The Ring.
I know, that's totally what it was like. And then she, like, runs her hair, like, back and forth over his bloody face. And I was like, A, your hair is getting bloody, and B, that is so much creepier than when he described it before.
Like, I just want you to know right now you're taking a big dump all over my breastplate of righteousness.
Let me put on my helmet of courage.
Excuse me, helmet of salvation?
Oh, sorry.
Gosh, I know somebody who needs a shield of faith. Thank you, end scene. So let's grade this and get it over with. What grade are you giving The Gray? Okay.
So I think when I originally left it, I was kind of like, you know what, that wasn't so bad. And I was thinking B minus. But the more that we talk about it, I'm thinking it's going to be more like a C+.
And I even feel like I'm giving it a little bit of a higher grade than you might guess based on what we've talked about here. But I would give it a C simply because for me, it was just kind of, you know, it is what it is. For people who look for things inside this and can find, you know, swords of the spirit or whatever, maybe they'll like it.
Right.
But right. I thought it was a very well made and ultimately useless movie.
Yeah.
I think we did a good job here.
Yeah, we scored it pretty well.
We scored it well, but next time we'll do something better. I feel like I want you to just, you know, take off your coat, relax in this chair. Here's a brandy snifter. Now let me pour you some Journey to the Mysterious Island. Don't get sick when you drink it. And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. As always, you can check out PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can leave us comments and subscribe to our posts, and you can also email us at scornpop@gmail.com. However, if you opt to not do any of these things, we know where you live, and we're going to send Liam Neeson after you, and he's totally face-punch happy after spending an entire movie not punching anything in the face at all, so watch out, you've been warned.